Well?
It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today is
Luke
and Ralph.
That's right. The usual boys are back in town. Kind of.
Did we ever leave?
I mean, we left in general. Anyway, this is episode number 113, lucky number 113. And today's episode are the movies that I picked, which are going to be Antebellum, which is currently available to rent, unfortunately, for $20, because it's supposed to have a theatrical release. But it's on VOD for people to rent, or I don't think you can buy it yet, though. But that's where you can find it. And then we're going to review a movie called, that I'm checking because I forgot, Mulan. That's right, we're going to doing the remake of Mulan, which is available on Disney Plus, exclusive apparently, and more so than that, it costs how much? $30
to rent this one. Yeah,
around $30 to rent it on Disney Plus. So we picked expensive movies today, and we're going to conclude our show with a review of A Few Good Men from the 90s. I don't have the number in my head right now, right. And classic film starring Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, Demi Moore, and so on.
Wait, Demi Moore was in this movie?
You messing with me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, from Ghost. Ghost fame girl. All right, so you can always, find this show, as well as other shows, over at otherpodcast.com. Don't forget to check that out for everything we've ever done so far. And it's been a lot, about 112 shows of them. Check it out, otherpodcast.com, as well as you can send feedback to podmoviecast@gmail.com. For any of our discussions or opinions or what have you. If you want to find out Luke's favorite color, don't say it, Luke. Keep it a surprise. Email it to that Gmail. All right. So, Luke, what you been up to lately? How you been?
I've been all right. I'm just planning a trip to the East Coast right now. I'll be leaving in a couple days.
California?
East Coast.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's deep east. See, if you go east enough, you can end up in California. You know, that's what I meant. You didn't let me finish. Okay, where?
No, because the world is flat. Don't you know that?
Oh, Jesus. Not just again. He sighed too.
I forgot
for,
I was going to do.
Vacation?
Yeah, it's a little thing. Going to see some people and stuff. Visit some places in Connecticut, Boston, Salem.
You'd be safe in all those places with your skin tone.
Huh?
Nothing. Yeah.
Oh, so, shit. I was on mute. That was funny.
You were on mute? You mute yourself?
Yeah.
What the fuck? What were you saying?
I laughed out loud.
Oh, you LOL'd. All right. So, when are you doing it?
Sunday.
Oh, wow. Very soon.
Yeah.
You'll be back in time for the next show? Because I think you're picking the next movie.
Yes, I will be back in time for the next show.
You better be. All right. Anything else you want to talk about?
No. I mean, not a whole lot's been, you know, happening. Right. Warzone, work.
Warzone.
Same old Warzone. Got it.
Warzone.
Ralph?
What about me?
How are you?
I'm okay.
Sorry. This isn't the first time, guys.
It's the first time this week?
I guess.
Yeah. No, just tired, you know. Tired of being tired. Besides that, I mean, I saw more movies than one. That's crazy.
Yeah, we're going to get to that very soon.
That's a bonkers
milestone. Milestone in my book.
Besides that, you guys be proud of me. I'm undefeated in one of my fantasy leagues. Fantastic. So, like,
oh, football so pays off. Cool.
Cricket?
Yeah, that's what I thought. So.
Yeah. Is it cricket?
Yes, cricket. Oh,
good. I mean, those are hard to get into.
Really?
You have to be a real fan for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I had to buy a sports package just for that to watch it.
Oh, you poor thing. You.
2 in the morning. No, other than that, I mean, just been watching football because, you know, football's Berg. Stuff like that. Yeah, I had my anniversary with my wife. That was nice.
Oh, what year?
The 6th.
But that's married. A marriage, though.
Marriage,
what's the total?
Yes.
No, that's the question. What is the total?
Wow.
Right.
Calling you out.
Right.
Oh, is that because she's there in the background and you're going to have to get it wrong?
Nope. I mean, she can't hear you.
So, yes.
Yeah. I think she got it by now. He said anniversary. He said six.
I did.
That.
She's not here. She's not here. She moved. Oh,
okay.
I don't know.
Okay. You don't know. You have to do the mental math, huh?
So much.
It's okay. Six.
15 years. 15.
After 10, who cares, right? That's what I'm saying.
That's literally what happened. Yeah. I don't care.
Right. Who cares?
Sure.
How was it, though? Have fun?
Yeah. It was good.
You made an event. Like, you made a thing out of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, we went out to dinner. And
good
had
husband.
A nice thing. That's and she good. Got... Good. Oh, yeah. 100% good husband. Yeah. She got me a great gift. It's a new monitor that I'm buying myself.
Here's money. Thanks, hon.
And it's not even that. It's just like... It was like a nice heartfelt card that she wrote. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, a nice little note. I mean, and she got like a Pandora bracelet for me. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to buy myself a monitor. Just letting you know.
Wow.
And she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Because you need one more of those. You don't have enough. Right?
Thank you. Finally, someone
that
else.
That was sarcasm. That was sarcasm.
Oh.
Okay. Moving on to me, I am planning the Halloween thing that I'm having here.
Ooh, I bought my costume.
Me too.
Oh, hey. Oh, that's so great that people are bringing costumes.
I actually need your help. Can you make me into like kind of zombie face?
Who?
You.
Yeah, I can.
Perf.
Yeah, I can try, definitely. Lexi and I can give it a shot. We've done it before. It's been a bit, but we can do it. Anyway, we chose our costumes, and it's going to be great. And we got our masks in. We just got to get the rest of it and kind of put the details into the masks, into the costume, I mean. And I'm trying to figure out what to, because I've always liked the idea of hosting. I like hosting. I like the planning of it. I like the preparation of it. I like the design of them, you know? I know, weirdo. But I'm aging way too fast for you guys in this case. But I've always wanted to do it. And now I have a chance to. I have a place here. And so I'm going to like try to prep like a whole menu a little bit. Not like a whole feast or anything. Just like lighter things. Don't expect
so that. We should eat before we show up.
You should eat before, or I was thinking maybe making it more like potlucky, or are we all getting together and order something, whatever.
We're ordering pizza.
Probably. But I'm saying for like the desserty stuff, I have some plans. You know, I'm trying to decorate the house a little bit, a little more befitting the Halloween theme. But yeah, other than that, I've been into like a lot of gaming lately. I've just been playing a lot of different kinds of games that I haven't really played before, and it's been fun, you know? Old
what you've been
too.
Playing?
I started Devil May Cry 5, which I've never played any of them before, and I just
Same.
Started on the fifth one. It's very beautiful game. Meaning, there's a lot of like detail and graphics to that game, and I don't like the loading screens in between all the time. But otherwise, it's kind of
well. It's
fun.
Okay when you get the Xbox Series X or the PS5, that'll be a thing of the past.
Right, I assume it would be. I assume it would be instantaneous, right? But it's fun so far. I'm just kind of getting this story, you know, even though I know nothing of the other games. I've been playing Hades, which is the Supergiant game. So into it.
I actually bought that like when it was like in like fucking early access, I think, on the Epic Game Store. That's like, the only thing I ever bought there.
Yeah.
But that's
I had a friend who did that too, yeah.
That game's changed, I think, a lot since early access. I haven't touched it in a long time, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to be like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, maybe.
And you're playing that on the Switch, right?
I am, yes. Yeah. I am. On the Switch, it's not exclusive, obviously, but it's on the Switch. No. And it makes me want to play Bastion again and Transistor again, because it's just so much fun.
Did you ever play Pyre?
Never played Pyre. I heard of it. Is that from them, too?
Yes, it is.
Never played it. But I probably would now. I mean, I'm just so into their style. I like the way they make up these games. These are what kind of games are they? I mean, they're hack and slashy, but what kind of, is it arcade style? What is it?
Platformer?
Rogue?
Is that the right time?
Rogue? Yeah, I guess.
I don't know.
Hades is more rogue, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about categories to define it, but it's kind of like a little old style, but modern. It's cool. I've been playing that and watching a lot of shows and stuff. But anyway, that's enough about that. Let's get into some recent discoveries. Now, we all saw one movie. We're basically having a mini review here of one movie. And what's that movie we saw, Luke?
Only movie that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, to be fair, I did see Audition again with a friend, but I saw that.
Who was Jake?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to say, who the hell would watch that? Oh, I was like, I really had to think about it. I was like, who's going to watch that with you?
That isn't on these mics, you mean?
Yeah. Right.
Right.
So we all watched the Netflix original, Enola Holmes.
Doesn't that mean alone?
Backwards, yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Enola Holmes. We all saw it in, separately from each other.
Yeah, that's what's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
what turned you on to this movie, Luke? What made you want to see Enola Holmes?
Ooh, good question.
Henry Cavill.
Okay, Roth, what about you?
Henry Cavill? No, I'm just kidding. Really? No. I mean, that's a plus, I guess.
He's like PCMR God right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he really is, yeah. Okay. I don't know what that means. Honestly, I like home stuff. I like detective stuff and
yeah.
murder mystery shit. So.
I mean, the Stranger Things girl turned me on to it. So like,
yeah, that too, for
Millie
sure.
Bobby Brown. It took me a while to remember, like who is she? I know her. I've seen her somewhere.
Yeah, oh, she has bald hair somewhere.
Exactly.
I remember her bald somewhere. All right. So what do we think of this movie?
Hold on, before you
said everybody at once.
Oscar, did you say you weren't sure what we were talking about when I said PCMR God?
Right, I don't know what that is.
When Henry Cavill was doing interviews for The Witcher, they asked him, had he played the games? And he's like, yeah. And they're like, oh, cool. Xbox or PlayStation? He's like, no, PC. He's a big PC gamer. And a couple weeks ago or months ago now, he like built a PC and he did this amazing Instagram video of him building his own PC from parts. It was amazing.
So, and so that's what PC and the PCMR stands
PCMR
for.
PCMR is PC Master Race. We are better than those dirty console.
I don't know if you should invoke the Master Race into anything anymore these days. I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah, that's why it's called PCMR.
Yeah, that's not saving it very well, though. It still has a shade of darkness on there.
PC users are better than console.
They have
users.
The dank memes.
What?
They have the dank memes.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay, that's great that I got cleared that up now. What did you think of the damn movie, Luke?
I thought it was good.
Yeah?
Charming little thing, yeah.
Charming little thing. That's how I would put it, too. Yeah, I think Millie Bobby Brown's pretty solid. I think she's charismatic enough to hold the screen, you know, for the most for that movie. I think, I don't know if she's... I really don't know actress's origins. So I don't know if she's from England or not. Does she pull off a good enough English accent? To me, she does, but I'm a layman, so I don't know. I ain't from that island, you know, so I couldn't say for sure, but it sounded pretty genuine. Henry Cavill, awesome, Holmes. Lately, as more Sherlock Holmes projects have been made since the books came out by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, it's like they progressively have made Sherlock Holmes more of an asshole. And as well as Mycroft. It's just more. Let's just lean into the.
Well, let's be realistic. Mycroft is an asshole.
What? Mycroft. Yeah, they're both assholes. But Mycroft is especially an asshole in this movie. But so is Sherlock. But he's not that bad, I guess. It's just a fun movie to watch. Kind of it's not like the best Sherlock Holmes movie or anything. I don't even know if there is one. I'm sure there's a better one. I can't think of it right now. But, and I have a great love for the show, the BBC Cumberbatch show. Obviously, I've read one or two of the stories. It doesn't really meet that criteria, but it's pretty good. It has the same flow of it. If you want to see something mysterious, something cool, some people figuring shit out, it does all of that. So I enjoyed it. Roth?
I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was fun. I fell asleep my first viewing. But it was like 1 a.m., so
Right.
Give me a break. I don't know, is this a trend in movies lately, like the last couple of years, like looking at the screen and talking to it? It works, because I think Millie Bobby Brown is very charismatic, and she has that, like, she changes her look when she looks at the audience, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I overall thought it was cool, like the... its own like twist of it. It is a Sherlock Holmes movie, air quotes, but it's not. I thought it was fun.
Yeah,
I overall had fun with it. That's what's important.
Yeah. That's really all you want from those movies, I think. I had fun with it too, and sounds like it was just a nice, normal, charming time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Enola Holmes. That's all Luke has been watching. Ralph, you saw something else.
I did.
Wait, hold on. To your question, she was born in Spain, and then she moved to southern or a coastal town in southern coast of England. So she might have the accent down.
Oh, okay. So she's so her American accent in Stranger Things is what her acting is, not like
I think so. Well, born in Spain, moved to England, and then 4 years after that, I think when she was up about 8-ish, I think she moved to Florida. So she's had enough time to get it down.
Oh, okay. All right.
The more you know. Thank you, Wikipedia.
The more you know, yes. All right. Now, Roth, what else have you watched?
I saw a documentary called Class Action Park. This is on, I saw it on HBO Max. I think it's HBO, right. though.
Right. How bad is this park?
I heard it's great.
I mean, I hear it's like a kid's fantasy. From what it is, it's total 90s thing. Like late 80s, early 90s kind of park like you would want to go to for sure. But like you're coming out scrapes, bruises. there's no, I don't know, safety.
Right. There seems to be like no safety concerns, no like lifeguards or something like that, right?
There's lifeguards and stuff. There is like a minimum amount of safety, but there's a lot of stuff that's like, oh, well, go on this ride at your own risk. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, it's only all cement. And you're like, oh, but I'm going down like 40 miles an hour. Okay. Stuff like that. And then there's also like jump on this waterfall. There's no rail guards anywhere. There's no like timing of people jumping. There's like no safety at the park, or very little safety. Essentially, there's lifeguards which are working their asses off, and there's like staff, of course. But when it comes to like certain rides, it's just like people going like just yeah go. Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter. They don't check on people. It's like yeah, you're going on your own risk. Like all right. You bust something, go see the nurse.
Yeah.
Kind of shit like that. And then, like, yeah, it's just dumb shit.
Would you go?
With the waterfall, for example. if I was nice. A kid, yes. I would want to go. I mean, yeah, like, that's weird because, like, nowadays, it'd be a little harder for me to say I want to go. But growing up, I would have wanted to go 100%. Yeah.
So
there is like a legit percentage of being able to die. Like a not like a oh like a you know one in a million. No,
one in a thousand.
A lot closer. I'll tell you that right now. You're coming injured 100%. Like something's gonna happen. Scrape, bruise,
right.
Something. Yeah. But I'll read it real quick. It says, it is a documentary that focuses on a dangerously legendary water park and its slew of injuries and crimes along the child safety concerns. So, like, that's, yeah, essentially the movie.
They should do the same thing for an adult water park where they don't give a shit about the thing, about any, like, you know what I'm saying?
You don't need air.
I do feel like,
all the rest areas would be bars, right? Because they're adults only. Air. And, like... You know, there's no handrails or anything because, you know, we're adults. We can go at our own goddamn risks. We should do that. But, Luke, you were saying something?
Yeah, I actually have a friend from the East Coast that actually went to Action Park, like, back in the day. And, yeah.
In the heyday?
Yes,
did,
lost
did
their front tooth.
Hurt themselves?
Oh, yikes.
Fuck. Yeah. Because they told me about the documentary, and I'm like, yeah, I heard about it. I haven't watched it. And they're like, yeah, I went there, like, you know, in my youth. And they told me, like, that one of the things, they, you know, went face first into something and lost their front tooth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I
bet.
That's
believable from what I've seen.
Yeah. All right. So that's a real legit place called Class Action Park. I mean, what's the name of the actual park, though?
It's called Action Park.
Okay, I thought Class Action Park was a... Oh, that's a pretty good play.
They just added a class.
yes, pretty clever.
Isn't it? Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny because, like, they talk to you about how, like, it starts off and how it becomes this big thing. And it's on the East Coast. It's kind of trying to become its own, like, Disney Six Flags kind of thing. And it does a good job because it's, like, in a prime location away from... close to Atlantic City. And there's nothing around it besides... that, you know, so like it has like no competition, so you have to go like to Disney World to Florida or all the way to the West Coast for Disneyland and shit like that. So it's like a lack of foresight. The owner is a piece of shit. That's essentially this. a humongous piece of shit.
Do they have a cigar in his mouth at all times? Like that kind of?
They show some stuff, but that's about it. Like, they just talk about him. But
and where did you see it?
I think he's dead. Yes. HBO Max.
Anything else you've seen?
Yep, yep.
All right. No. I'm going to move on here pretty quick on some of these. Don't worry about it, guys. Besides Enola Holmes, I saw a horrible movie I'm going to tell you guys to avoid called The Babysitter Killer Queen. Has anyone heard of it? Great. So here's the little thing. 2 years after Cole survived a satanic blood cult, he's living another nightmare, high school, and the demons from his past still making his life hell. Whoever wrote that is whatever. So the reason I saw this movie, directed by Mick G, who is, you know, half and half. Half of the movies are kind of fun to watch, the other half are as bad as this movie is. It's because Netflix released, it's a Netflix original, and they did another movie a few years back called The Babysitter. And this is the sequel to that. And The Babysitter is what kind of that positive description says about this boy who's very cool, you know, female, high school age or maybe college age babysitter. It like lets him have all the fun, and he has a crush on her, but she's kind of cool, you know, and all this stuff, right? And he wakes up one night and goes downstairs to, I don't know, drink milk or hears noises or something, and he stumbles upon that his babysitter was actually using his house to have like a cult meeting with her group or whatever, and they were like sacrificing something, or they're in the middle of something, and it looked like bad, right? And so the rest of the movie is him like running away from them, and then along the way, murder happens, and you know, but it's more fun, upbeat than that. It's not as dire, but it's a cool concept. And they made a sequel, and the sequel makes no sense. It really goes nowhere. It tries to be funny and fails every single turn. At every single turn, it brings back the old characters in a like undead kind of way, which I don't think serves the movie well at all. So I really recommend you guys do not watch this movie, but I will give a light recommendation to the original, The Babysitter, which I still think is a overall good movie. So that's it. It's on Netflix. Don't check it out. Cool. Next movie here is, I kind of mentioned it off air, is that I saw Cuties, which is another Netflix original, kind of. It came from France, but it's a Netflix original only in America here. And Cuties is a very interesting story. I won't get too much into the politicalness of it, but I'll read the description here. Ami, an 11-year-old girl, joins a group of dancers named the Cuties at school and rapidly grows aware of her burgeoning femininity, upsetting her mother and her values in the process. Yeah, like I said, a French movie made, I don't know if it's Paris, it's too kind of street level to know what city they're in. I forget where they are. But it's a movie that it's like a coming-of-age movie. It's a straight-up coming-of-age movie, but it's hard and it's gritty. And it's definitely a lot more serious and open-ended as far as the, you know, it doesn't really shy away from a lot of the intensity, awkward situations that 11-year-old girls, when they get in trouble, can get into in a modern age. If anyone has seen the movie Eighth Grade, would say that this movie is a good pairing. Cuties is a good pairing with Eighth Grade in the way that it focuses on a certain age of a certain type, meaning girls living today with, you know, think of how the pressures they have with Snapchat and Instagram and how they feel and how it's, you know, horrible time really for them. And they give themselves a horrible, horrible guilt and God knows what. And the movie had some political controversy. I would say a lot controversy. Still today. But this controversy began in August before the movie came out in September, regarding the way it showed these 11-year-old girls and the way it was portrayed and the stuff they did in the movie and God knows what. It all started with the poster. And then from there, QAnon followers, as well as right-wing people and conformers and other people in general, would saw this movie as like this weird pedophile male gaze. Like a pedophile gaze. You know, you've heard of the male gaze, but this is specific to pedophiles. And that people were saying, like, this is bad. We should take it down. We should cancel Netflix, get rid of Netflix, and all this stuff. Look it up if you're interested. I will not say more than that. I just want to say that the movie, I thought, was a pretty good coming-of-age story. Not, like, amazing. Not one of the worst either. I liked it fine. Pretty intense, as it does say. It is intense. It was hard to watch, but that was the point. And but I also can't super relate because, you know, all the reasons. I'm not an 11-year-old girl, and I don't live today like that and all this stuff. But, yeah, pretty intense, though. Don't watch it with the kids. So that's Cuties on Netflix. Check it out if you're interested. And the last movie I have here is an old movie, actually. And I saw this on HBO Max. I keep forgetting to say Max now. It's from 1985. It's called Tampopo, which I assume you guys haven't heard.
No.
Enlighten.
No.
This is a Criterion Collection movie. That's one of their Criterion, like, AMC movies or whatever they call them. A truck driver stops at a small family-run noodle shop and decides to help its fledgling business. The story is intertwined with various vignettes about the relationship of love and food. This is a Japanese movie directed and written by Itami Zuso. And it stars a bunch of people, including a very young Ken Watanabe, by the way. I will not butcher the names right here in front of you. But this is the technical, it describes it as a comedy. And I guess I would go there. But it really is everything. It's a bit comedy. It's a bit erotic love story. It's a bit of action. It's a bit of, like, it's really a lot of Western. It copies a lot of American Western themes in the movie. It's a really fun movie. This is one of my favorite movies of the year I've seen, period. Even thinking of rewatching some of the movies I've seen before that are great. It's a really intensely great, awesome movie. It's so much fun to watch. It makes you so hungry for ramen. It's about perfecting ramen, essentially. And the stuff, and it goes into all the minutiae detail of everything that involves making awesome ramen.
Highly interested.
And it's it follows all that really well. And the vignettes are very strange, too. But once you understand where they're going by the end of the movie, You can't help it but just fall in love with this movie. It's a movie you want to fall in love with. And it doesn't really ask for you much of you, just to pay attention. And I did, and I don't regret it. It's a really intensely fun movie. I can't say a lot because you can't spoil this movie, and yet I don't want to say details of everything. But the opening alone is great, and I love it. So if you guys are interested, check it out. Tampopo is on HBO Max right now. And that's what I've been watching, and those are our recent discoveries. And we're going to take a little break, and we're going to get into our first review of the evening, which is going to be Antebellum.
There she is. Guess what? Daddy is going to get you dressed for school today.
We are descendants of the gods. This land was always ours. But we must never relent. We're nowhere. And everywhere.
You're from Virginia, right? I can tell. You're special. We are the future. You. You're not like the others.
Whoever you were before, that's over.
Successful author Veronica Henley finds herself trapped in a horrifying reality and must uncover the mind-bending mystery before it is too late. Antebellum, sounds fun to say. Stars
Dr.
Janelle.
Veronica?
Yes, Dr. Veronica. Stars Janelle Monáe, Eric Lang, or Lange, I'm not sure. Gina Malone, who I haven't seen in a long time, actually. Jack Huston, Arabella Landrum, Tongai Chrysilla, maybe. Kiersey Clemons, T.C. Mahern, a bunch of actors. I'm trying to think. Marg Richardson, who I've seen before. I can't think of what. And Gibberty Sibide from Precious, a book by Sapphire or something. I forgot the whole title. Bunch of people. And this is written and directed by Gerard Bush and Christopher Rentz. So, Antebellum. I'm going to start on this one first, guys. This is kind of a horror mystery movie.
Wow. I don't know if you call it horror.
That's what it says on the thing. I'm just reading off it. But what I would call it is, I wouldn't say a horror movie. But it's very close. It's horrifying, but it's not a horror movie, right? But the fact that it's the movie's kind of a mystery box in a way, I'm not spoiling too much here. In a way, it is a mystery box. Kind of makes the horrifying stuff in it kind of a horror movie. So I can see why people would confuse it. I wouldn't call it a horror movie. I would definitely call it like a thriller and a mystery for sure. So this movie is was surprisingly better than I thought. I mean, I saw a trailer for this movie either late last year or early this year, you know, before the insanity that is COVID began. And we were expecting a movie, a theatrical release. We never got it. And I was excited to see it because the trailer that I saw made the movie seem, it gave me, you know, because when you see a trailer for a movie that's like a puzzle thing or a mystery, you know, a good trailer will leave you wanting to ask, like, what the hell is this movie about? Or in a good way, I mean, not in a bad way. And like makes you ask questions and want to figure it out, even in the trailer itself. And that's what the trailer did for me. And I saw it just the one time, and it made me question about, like, man, I was thinking the whole time, like, is this like a parallel lives thing? What's going to happen? And I don't know. But or she's time traveling maybe, and she got stuck in the past and got, like, you know, black people shouldn't travel in the time because it's never good for them. Anyway. So I was thinking all these things, and then I saw the movie, and the movie did not disappoint, and it was beyond my expectations, obviously, beyond what I was thinking the movie was going to be about. I enjoyed it. Janelle Monáe heads it off really well. I think she nails it in the movie. The movie actually opens up in the 1860-something, I don't know, Civil War time. I can't remember the date.
Right. when was the Civil War?
Right. During that brief time when... the Union still had, well, the Union was still there. Who was the bad guys in this?
The Confederates?
Confederates, thank you. I was thinking confetti in my head. It was just weird, okay? It was when the war was happening, but it wasn't like they had lost yet. So this is like in that brief time there, a couple of years in there, where we still had slaves and all this stuff was happening. And Janelle Monáe plays a character who is one of the slaves. And with very specific, in a very specific like plantation or place, whatever, where they have strict rules and different kinds of rules too that you never really see in other biopics or period pieces of this sort. But yeah, it is another, if you want to call it this, another kind of a slave story. But it still has some mysterious components, even in the beginning, in this opening, like, what, 30, 40 minutes of the movie. And then it smash cuts into a modern day Janelle Monáe, who is an author. Like, as I said in the description, she's this author and for all these things. And she's really good, a big activist on black power and all this stuff and inclusion and equality and all these things. And but there's something weird happening in the background. The movie, I thought, was kept the mystery very well. It kept it very taut and kind of thrilling. And I ended up really enjoying this movie overall without saying too much more. I just want to explain a little further about the plot. Raph, what did you think of this movie?
I'm kind of mirroring you on your end. I liked it. It was a... what's it called? It reminded me... a little bit of just a small bit of Midsommar. So yeah, I overall liked it. I thought that it was cool, the disparities between the two. Because like you said, it starts in Civil War times, and then you see Janelle Monáe in current times. It just felt creepy the whole time. Like, it was creepy vibes. And there's just like little things that are happening, or how people see her. And at first, I can't tell if the movie's trying to like make it seem like it's in her head, like she's just seeing this, or is it like something that's just like kind of there, like, yeah, no, it's there, like, you don't doubt yourself, right, kind of thing,
right? So I think the or movie it could be a dream or something, you don't know,
right, a mix of that. So like, the movie does a good job of like kind of keeping you like, I don't know where we're going yet, with that aspect. So I like it. I mean, I like, and like I said, I don't want to ruin anything because I'm in the same boat as you here. But yeah,
we'll
overall,
very soon.
No, I know we will. So, but overall, I did like the movie. I found it compelling, and I mean, I saw it all in one go, and it was late as fucking night. So
nice. Luke, what did you think of Antebellum?
Okay, so I actually saw it in two sittings because I started watching it late last night, and with about like 30 minutes left, I had to stop, and I was like, "Fuck me," because it was getting really good. And I don't want to spoil it too much, but man, I had no expectation that this is what was going to happen.
Did you know anything about the movie at all?
No, I had no fucking clue. I actually had to, when I like searched for it, just as you know, before I watched it,
yeah.
I looked up the definition. I'm like, what does antebellum mean, by the way?
What does it mean?
It is
I meant to
occurring
look it up,
or existing before a particular war, especially the American Civil War.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very appropriate then.
Very, very appropriate. So I was like, oh shit, okay, so it's going to be a period piece. And when it starts off like that, I was like, okay. And I was expecting like something sci-fi because, you know, it had a horror thing. And I'm like, oh, maybe there'll be something crazy going on. And then, you know, surprise. I don't want to say it, but yeah.
Right. No, we're going to get into it right now. So it seems like you're a fan of the movie too, right?
Oh yeah, because like I went to work today, and then I was like, "Fuck!" Well, like, what happens in this movie? Like, what's gonna happen in the last like 30 some minutes? You know, I was really curious. And, like, everything, and like my mind was just going all over the place. Like how is this happening? You know how?
Right. Awesome. Well, that's a good mark of a mystery right there. So we're gonna get into spoilers for Antebellum just so we can talk freely about this fucking thing starting right now.
Enjoy your dinner.
No.
Sorry. I think what my friend is trying to say is that...
Actually, babe, I got it. This table is 100% not acceptable, and I think that you know that, don't you? Becky. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm actually not going to go back and forth with you about exactly why this table is unacceptable. You're going to seat us over there.
Oh,
Thank you so much, Rebecca. You're doing great. Yo, get your sis. I'm going to call Cassidy.
No, this is good.
Yeah, well, then you're welcome.
Okay, so if you're sticking around and you haven't seen the movie and you want to get spoiled, I'm just going to say, the twist is...
It's the motherfucking village.
It's the village. It's the reverse of the village in a way, where it's by force, but it's happening, right?
It's like, you assholes.
The whole movie is a modern piece, really. But but the fact that the fact that it wasn't surprising, and the twist was surprising. I'm saying the fact that that a lot of people react this way or would do this thing or anything, and all the actions that comes about creating that compound where she gets stuck in. The fact that I wasn't surprised by those kind of motivations kind of says a lot about the history of how we thought we were watching a period piece, half a period piece movie, and it wasn't, and it's not much of a difference at all because their actions and thoughts are very similar. And that's one of the points of the movie that I feel that the movie drives home really well, because it doesn't say it out loud. It just shows it to you, right? It just shows you how there are parts. Not just saying in the South necessarily. There are parts everywhere in the country. This still can, I mean, this is where they shoot period movies, obviously, but it can also be retooled for something way more nefarious, like bringing back literally the worst aspects of our history in this country and bringing it back to modern life and neglect these people of all their rights and so on and so forth. And yeah. It's very scary. It's a scary thought, and that's what makes it a horror movie for people.
Yeah.
It has a very Get Out feel, right, in the same way, too. Where, like, you know, this is a weird town that controls black people and makes them to whatever they want. It's very similar in that respect. This is a reverse village. This is a racist village. This is we're talking about Village from the M. Night Shyamalan movie, by the way,
mm-hmm.
In case you guys are asking. What do you guys want to say in spoilers? Ruff?
No, I guess just that whole, like, dreamish sequence that she was having. It's just, like, recalling, almost like she's just remembering a different time, and it feels like she was living like a completely different life, which she is. I mean, but I think the movie does a good job of that aspect, and it feels like she's been there forever. Just the look on her face, her demeanor, a lot of stuff. So, like, and obviously her hair is different, but that's not that bad.
Yeah. Did you guys feel like it was some sort of reincarnated thing at all? Did you guys ever have that thought too, or like?
I think the movie was trying to throw a red herring on that. I mean, they kind of did with that one friend who has like a TED talk or something about it. And I thought at first it could have been something like similar, or like she's just like, I thought she was like living somebody's past at the same time as her present, like in this weird whatever.
Yeah, like a sci-fi thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was going to go more that route. And then it just, you know, villaged us.
Right. I actually thought that was going to be more more dramatic. I thought it was going to be more about, like, she's so attuned, so to speak. Like, she knows her history on this in this country very well, that her great-great-great-great-whatever, like, went through this in this plantation during the Civil War, right? All this stuff. And that she researched and knows exactly where she was and where she died and what work she did and what plantation it was, that she was always connected to that ancestor and fueled her to do the work she was doing in the modern age, right, with the books and the TED Talk and so on and so forth. And that I thought there was going to be more about that, which would have been fine. Obviously, this is much more sexier. This is awesome, right? I mean, not awesome. As a movie plot, it's awesome that what's really happening. But I thought it was going to be more like that, too, as well, I mean. But before I go on any further, Luke, in spoiler session, what'd you think of the twist? I mean, did you, when you stopped the movie halfway through,
okay,
or 30 minutes before, did you know already or no?
No. No. Yeah. That's when I was like, whoa, what the fuck? So at first, when I, you know, she wakes up and it's the modern time. I'm like, oh, okay, that's weird. I'm like, is she dreaming this or is it like, then I was like, oh, she's an author. Like, maybe she writes books on this and, like, you know, she dreams it and she writes it.
I love how conditioned we are.
So yeah. I was really curious. I'm like, oh, this is so weird. But then, like, with the whole, like, kidnapping shit, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, how can this, like, how can they pull this off, this fucking operation? Like, this is fucking nuts.
You know, and it feels worse, though. I mean, even though, like I said before, I wasn't surprised. The fact that there are definitely a lot of white people who would do this, want to go back to these old days, you know, they still wave the flags around, right? Like they haven't lost, and all this stuff. Right? Like, as much as I know that, it was actually worse seeing, you know, those people being burned in that thing, or in the opening, that slow motion opening with that girl getting killed in front of the dude, and all this stuff. It was worse because they were pulled out from a life where they've already been through this via over 100 years worth of like strife, work, and civil rights acts and marches and whatever, to get to a point where they don't have to do this anymore. They don't have to experience this stuff anymore. And the fact that these guys, all these people in that plantation, the victims, I mean, they grew up with like telephones. You know what I'm saying? Like they grew up with television. They grew up with different things. A life where they weren't going to be treated this way, and that they were. I don't know, somehow it feels worse to me, and I don't know if you guys have felt that way about it, but of the atrocities that is like rewinding in time there, I don't know. Very strange feeling I had there. But yeah, it was intense.
Yeah, but like a big part of me was like, they're obviously somewhere. Like, what make, how can, can't they just like try to escape?
Yeah.
And it bothered me so much.
It's a lot of land. And, I mean, yeah, they are somewhere, but I don't know.
Yeah, all you need is one motivated rich person to have that land, right? And if it's like... And
but it was like a park. Anybody could have visited it.
Well, it was like one of the, what do you call them?
A reenactment?
Reenactment war park, like a southern... They exist all over the place. I've seen them once before in my life. And they're big pieces of land, but I guess they can, you know, they can separate the people who use the land for reenactments and then have this other area completely off and be under the disguise of the fact that, you know, be under the guise of being a reenactment park, but not really. I mean, maybe it's a stretch if you think of it, but it wasn't a stretch for me to believe.
Right.
But in this culture, maybe it feels like it wouldn't be a stretch, and it might be buying into that more because of today's topic. Hot topic of race and so on, more so than lately. Maybe it's easier for me to buy it now, and this movie is coming out really at the right time, or for a lot of people, maybe it's the worst time. I don't know. Maybe I'm being biased, but I didn't find it incredible, like unbelievable. That's my point. Like that part when there were some clues along the way too that they gave us. The way they talked, you know, because one thing that, you know, the more genuine, detailed period pieces about during this dark time in America's life, they really focus on what you know these black people can actually say, like how much of their speaking patterns actually is there, and they were speaking really well English when they did speak, and because they weren't allowed to speak. But when they snuck in a few things, they gave you clues to all this stuff. Like, or when the airplane flew over, even I didn't know that was an airplane. I should have thought of that.
Oh,
but
really?
It wasn't an airplane.
Wait, at the beginning or the second?
Yeah,
time?
No, in the beginning. Before.
Oh, there was one at the beginning.
Flashback. Yeah, before the flashback.
I didn't even know there was one at the beginning.
Yeah, they all looked up, and then the guy, the white guy who was in charge of them or whatever, said something like, "You know, don't say anything," or he said something like, "Go back to work," or said something like that.
Oh, I don't shit. Remember. That's crazy, because I was wondering, okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Now, the movie, I don't know what sound effect they actually used. I've only seen the movie once, but I missed it, because I'm watching what I think is a period piece, and I wouldn't expect an airplane, just like you wouldn't expect a cell phone ringing, right? It's like that, or seeing a Starbucks cup in the background. I'm just making fun of Game of Thrones there. But yeah, And I thought that was very cool, very, very, very good foreshadowing, or good like little evidence to give there, a little crumb of stuff. And then when you realize after the movie's ended that when it goes to Janelle Monáe in the future, that's actually a flashback. You're seeing the flashback of her getting kidnapped.
Yeah.
And all the clues that lead up to the actual kidnapping are kind of like, they have this like weird like, what do you call it? Like a skull and bones feel, right? Like they're the Illuminati. Like they're leaving symbols around. They're like sneaking into her room after she leaves. And there's like all this money thrown behind it because there's a sophistication and like a sleekness to her kidnapping, right? And the fact that they chose her very, very purposefully. Obviously, the guy wanted her. But like the guy who was raping her, I guess, wanted her. But like the way they did it, felt very much like there's always like shadows of a conspiracy in the background trying to take down the black man, so to speak, right? Or in this case, the black girl. And it has all that stuff in it. And I think the movie's pretty cool that it does that. Anything else you guys want to talk about, or highlight, or gush over or something? Her escape? Mm. How do we find her escape?
That was, dude, when she did that like crazy like backflip thing, you know, Exorcist style.
Yeah.
Holy balls.
Right.
At a point, I was like, wait, is this like the horror part? She's going to like turn some crazy ass thing? But no, she's just very flexible. But I think she was,
yeah.
That was very painful too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, it is reliving the ancestors thing. What the whole, yeah, it's exactly what that is. Except that this was a jail they could escape from, because everywhere else in the world, they're not doing this anymore. Ideally. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think what I liked was once we know the twist, the girl who killed herself, the one who like wants out right away, it makes it even more dreadful. Like, because you're mm-hmm. now you know why. Like, she recognizes her as who she is in real life,
mm-hmm.
And you're like this activist and this leader persona, and you know you've been belittled to nothing, right?
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, I know you're planning an escape, and she like wants out right away. And like in the beginning, you're just like, oh, wow, she's like really wants out. Like, that's weird. Like, I guess maybe mm-hmm. she got taken when she was free, right? Slave-wise. And so that's what I thought at first. And then I was like, oh, no, it's just like she wants out because she's, you know, it's even fucking worse.
Right, it's against the law and all this stuff.
Right. So...
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a very, very, very cool movie. I think, and mm-hmm. the fact that even though I saw that trailer in January or whatever, whenever it was, I knew nothing about this movie, and that made it all the more better. Discovering
what's going on,
it just made it better. I'm glad you guys didn't know either. It totally helped to make this movie awesome. I knew it was like a black driven story and stuff, but I knew nothing else. You know, just vague recollections of the trailer. But it looks like beyond fans of the movie, I think that's it. So unless you guys have something else about Antebellum.
No, I kind of wish they would kind of dive more into it, like how it got established maybe, or, you know, how they were able to keep it going. I don't know, I feel this is...
Yeah, I see your point. No, I mean, it isn't that kind of, it isn't like the Umbrella Corporation or something, like where like deep-seated roots into all these schemes and shit, and they have like massive underground like facilities, you know, like the idea of like all this stuff and how long they've been doing it and stuff. It all seems relatively newish, you know, like there's no children, for example. There's not a lot of things that usually comes into a well-established slave plantation. And if you look at the details of the thing, I think this is like the first gen, you know, so to speak. But the land was there and they just used it. And they just brought on all the correct fucking tables and set pieces that they would have back then. But yeah, that's what I think. But I don't know for sure, because you're right, Luke. It doesn't give you that information. It doesn't care to explain that. But maybe it's based on a book. Maybe you can read the book. Anyway, so that's it on Antebellum. We're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, we're going to review, what is the movie? Mulan. Mulan 2020, not the original, but Mulan on Disney Plus. Stay with us.
Do you know why the Phoenix sits on the right hand of the Emperor? She is his guardian, his protector. That she's both beautiful and strong. Your job is to bring honor to the family. Do you think you can do that?
Citizens, we are under attack from northern invaders.
Their leader calls himself Orichan.
Fights alongside a witch.
No survivors.
By edict of his imperial majesty, every family must contribute one man to fight.
Have you no son?
I am blessed with two daughters. I will fight.
We must be strong. This time it will not return.
A young Chinese maiden disguises herself as a male warrior in order to save her father. Mulan. That's it. That's the whole description.
That's it.
That's it. directed by Nikki Caro. Written by Rick Jaffa, Amanda Silver, Elizabeth Martin, and Lawrence Hinnick. Starring, oh fuck, I'm going to butcher names here.
Donnie Yen.
Jifei Liu. Maybe Jifei. Jifei? Fuck me. Lu, I'm gonna call Lu. Donnie Yen.
Wait, who's Fuck Me?
No. Is that from Austin Powers?
Yeah.
Donnie Yen, Lee Gong, Jet Li is in this movie, which I did not recognize, by the way.
Holy shit!
You didn't recognize him?
No!
Oh, guys!
Somebody else did either.
The moment he comes up, I was like, is that Jet Li? I was watching it with my wife, and she was like, nah. Wow.
That's like, why he was able to dodge those arrows so, you know, deftly. Yeah, Jason Scott Lee, Yosun An, Sima, Rosaline Chow, Pei Pei Cheng, Zhang Tang, and I'll stop there. Okay. Mulan Disney Plus remake. They've done this before. They did it with, I believe, The Jungle Book. They've done it with Cinderella. They've done it with Beauty and the Beast, which is a big tentpole one. Aladdin, which came out last year, also a big tentpole one. Lion King, which we all, at least I did, famously hate that movie. Still hate it to this day.
Still haven't seen it.
I mean, it's the worst movie of that year by far.
Okay, good.
By far, wow.
By far, yeah. No, wow. No joke, by far. Yep. And I wasn't a big fan of the Beauty and the Beast. It's okay. You know, it does it fine, I guess. But I'm not a fan of it. And Aladdin was surprisingly better than I thought it would be. I did enjoy it a lot more than.
I still got to watch that one because it's Guy Ritchie, right?
Yes, but that's it's not like you can see fucking Brad Pitt punching people, you know. You know, like, what do you expect?
Aladdin punching people?
No, he does no punching. He does it with a song. That's the only difference. Yeah. There's so much blood and cussing, but he sings with it. That's what. This is Mulan. This is a strange movie because it's a beloved older but it's from the 90s. Beloved 90s Disney movie that most people know, but we are going to separate spoilers from non-spoilers still, because I will say at the top here that there are humongous differences between this movie and its original. And that goes along with some of my first impressions of it. But before we get to that, Luke, you're going to tell us first. What did you think of Mulan?
Wow. Okay.
The fuck was that?
I think it was a pile of shit.
A pile of shit. Like,
okay, it's not that bad. But I think they have just from the beginning, I just had weird vibes about it. Okay? When they did that like little scene when Mulan was a kid and she did that like whole acrobatic thing, you know, falling down. There's this like one scene where she's like falling down and she's like all gracefully, and it looked so badly CGI'd, and I was like, this is horrible. Like, why would Disney even allow this? Like, this is like so bad. Like, I don't think even in the 90s you could have like made that look.
Okay, let's not say things that are out of proportion
here. It was just bad. It was just bad. And then like one of the best things about Mulan they took out, which is the music.
The music, right.
Yeah.
And the dragon.
And Mushu.
Mushu. Yeah.
And the cricket and the horse.
The cricket. The horse is there, but not in the same, you know, not the horse. Yeah. So.
Not the horse.
What, you never seen a black and white before?
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's anyways.
I'm going to be quoting the original.
It lost so much like of the comedy, and that was like the best part of it, and the music.
Okay.
It all lost its charm.
Got it, got it. All right, I understand where you're going with. Okay, not a fan of this remake, which is completely understandable, by the way.
And also, I did not like what they did with that witch character. Could have been some better development than that. It was just so predictable.
Okay. Raph, what did you think of Mulan?
So, I mean,
so bad.
I don't think it was like a pile of shit, but I'm a better outlook than Luke's, I think. I still have gripes with the movie. I do agree with the witch. She's just not used right. I also agree with... I feel like the movie's like half in on this Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon kind of fight style where I get to do these cool, you know, like parkour stuff or, you know... not believable jumps and fights.
Like
stuff.
Wuxia fighting styles.
Yeah, right, yeah. And I think it's like half in, half out. And they rely on the movie that, oh, well, it's her chi and she doesn't want to use it. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, no. Because all of a sudden, then everybody uses it. And you're like, wait, what? I thought we weren't doing this. It just feels like the movie doesn't know what it wants to do on that aspect. At least in the beginning, it's like, I don't know. It's whatever. And it just feels like whatever. Also, some of the fight scenes and how we get to certain things, like that big war scene when she reveals herself that she's Mulan and not whatever her other name is. I already forgot.
It's not Ping. I know that much.
No, it's not Ping. Yeah. She meets up with the witch. She just like randomly disappears from the fight. What the fuck? Like, it's so random. Like, there's a lot of random stuff going on in the movie. Right. And I want to like it. I thought a lot of the stuff was like, everything else that Mulan had was about honor and everything else. It was there. And there was attachments and they did a good job of like talking about that. But, coming from the animated Mulan, yeah, had this sense of charm and had this sense of, honor and tradition at the same time. And compared to this one, it had tradition and it had honor, but like, I don't know. I just felt like it was like a disservice to do it in that that fight style and like half in, half out of it. Like only some people have it, I guess. I don't know. It was just kind of weird. That kind of like took me out. And then I don't know. I guess we can talk more about as we go through the rest of the review.
All right. Well, I seem to be the movie's biggest fan in this podcast. I really enjoyed it. I had fun with it. I really did have a lot of fun with it. I thought that this is one of the, I mean, I really honestly, these live action remakes have been almost always total shit shows, in my opinion. The unnecessary shit shows. They're just, you know, a lot of people say they're just keeping the IP going, right, by making more of those. It's like making one of those straight-to-video sequels of Cinderella and Lilo and Stitch and shit like that, right? But even if it's not for those reasons, it's, you know, Disney just makes money on making these remakes, just no matter how hard or how little they tried. That seems to be the experience in some of these movies. Now, out of all those movies, I've only enjoyed three. One is The Jungle Book. Two, like I said before, is Aladdin. And Mulan is the third one. And out of all those, out of those three and all these other live action remakes, I want to say that Mulan, I think the reason why, I mean, I get what you guys are saying, because I don't see any fault in what you guys are saying. I don't believe in some of that stuff, but overall, I understand. I think Mulan works for me because if I want the music, I can just watch the original. I want a remake. If there has to be a remake, not to, you never have to make a remake, but if you have to, if you're doing it, you have to make it completely different. And I think this movie succeeded in not only making it different, but making it in its own way more adult. I found this movie more for an older crowd than your usual Disney fanfare.
I will agree with you. It is, I think, catered to people who saw the original movie.
It's catered for me, basically. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's supposedly for you two also. You two, Luke and Ruff. Not you two, the band. And yeah, it was supposed to be for you guys too. Nah, not for Bono. But it feels like it was meant for me. Kind of like I said, some of those other ones were meant for just kids, as far as remakes go and whatever. Beauty and the Beast might be another like serious take on a remake, right? It tries to be more serious about it. But that movie was just a straight up remake. There's very little differences between that and the very little. But Mulan makes it enough of a difference, and the fact that it doesn't anchor to its the original charming aspects, as you guys mentioned it, of the original Mulan from the 90s, is that not making it a musical is a big step forward into making a remake that it stands differently from that one, from the original, stands away from it in a good way. And I think all those things made the movie already more pleasant for me to enjoy. Because if it was a straight up, like, not scene for scene shot thing, but if it was a straight up remake like that, I would never have enjoyed it. Because I've already seen those songs. I've already seen this stuff. I don't need to rewatch it. You know, who would pay $30 for that? So, I enjoy a lot of the, like, the, not flashbacks, there's a term for it. The homages or whatever, the little sprinkles of, like, nods to the original that they do, from a little lilt of the song to, like, someone saying something that's usually in the song in the original, but saying it as if conversationally. All that stuff was very nice throwbacks. That's the word. That I enjoyed throughout the movie, and I think that made it kind of more fun, more airy, and more enjoyable, like more comedy, maybe. It brought in some little spurts of comedy for me. I like how they fixed up the whole thing with her love interest in the movie. They made it more age-appropriate, because most likely their general or colonel or captain or whatever is going to be a lot older, so it makes more sense. I actually like the opening, where she fights gravity itself with the chicken. And I didn't have that. I didn't have that struggle, Ralph, that you had with the martial arts style of the movie making, because it felt like to me, like, the more truth you are to yourself, the more likely you are kind of, like, so to speak, in a game setting, you know, level up to it. And I think the movie had a lot more fun doing that back and forth between real style battles and like wuxia type, you know, hidden dragon style. And I liked that it juxtaposed both. So it didn't bother me so much, but I understand how you said that. But yeah, I was a fan. I was a fan. Also, the main actress, I already forgot her name, Lou. Pretty great. I liked her a lot. I mean, it doesn't look like Mulan because she's an animated, but she does the part really well. What did you guys think of her, by the way, our heroine?
Heroin? Hell of a drug.
Yeah, it is.
No, I think she did a good job as acting it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I don't know. I saw her, I'd be like, you're not a dude.
Right, yeah, maybe that's the hardest thing about this movie, right? Is that some scenes, she doesn't look like a dude at all. Now, granted, some scenes it did work. I'm like, okay, I can see her like walking past her. I might think she's a dude. You know, that can work. Yeah, she has like a very...
What's her smell probably gave 100% helped her.
What? Oh, yeah. Her smell. Yes, of course. That's another interesting way to sidestep that problem, right? Is not shower until someone forces you, like, hey, you should shower. All right. At some point.
You smell, dude. Go shower.
Yeah. Very interesting. I like, and the way she slaps or bunking with the other soldiers was kind of funny. As I enjoyed that. I'm like, how the fuck is she going to get away with this? Yeah. I had fun with it. What did you think of her performance, Ralph?
I liked it. I thought she played it well. I thought she was actually, she felt like it was like a Mulan from what I remembered. It was just trying to somebody who actually wants to, you know, please her family still. It's just she can't do it in the way they want it. That's it. And it worked out. But yeah, performed. I had no issues overall, the actress-wise. She was fine.
Okay. All right. I think we should get into spoilers for it, so we can talk more about the witch and about the king and the emperor and stuff that happens after. So we're going to get into spoilers for Mulan 2020, starting right now.
Graceful, we see in a good wife. We see in Mulan. Serve her husband, silent, invisible. Is something wrong? To remain in the center of the table. Move the teapot.
All right, so what's your beef with the witch, Luke?
The whole thing, when as soon as
her
they
existence.
Met, kind of, yeah, like she should have. It's
okay.
I don't know what they're trying to push or pull with this, but it's like she had a whole thing like, oh, I know you're a woman, and you know I also had to fight for my place in this thing, and then fucking sacrifices herself so Mulan could go do her goddamn thing, and I'm like, oh, God. It was just so fucking predictable.
Okay. You mean predictable bad?
Yeah, very.
Like her turn and everything?
Yeah, how she turned to help Mulan and everything. It was bad. Hmm. And I think she was a fucking kind of better character than Mulan. I want to see a movie about the witch.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like My famous example, well, not famous by anyone, but like the example I kind of go to is in Hellboy, you know, that that person they fight, the one with the knives and stuff. I want the backstory of that guy, of the cool, like, badass guy who just ninjas his way into everywhere and just kills everyone every single time. It's kind of like that. Like, I want to know that guy's story and his training and everything. But the movie's not about him. But yeah, I can see that. I would say my only problem with the movie is the witch too. Not her predictability necessarily, although that is there. And I didn't exactly see it coming necessarily like that, but I didn't expect some sort of different thing either. But I wish I understood her motivations more. Like why she's there, everything a little more. And yeah. I wish maybe I missed a line. Maybe I missed it. But I also wish that they either colored in more of her character, you know, or the opposite, like make her more of a mystery, and then you don't need to have her go back on anything.
Yeah, I do feel like they went like half in, where
right,
she was. They're talking about her like she's a stray dog, right? And that's what the right. What's his name? I can't think of the main villain.
Saw
it
last week.
Boricon.
Yeah,
so I feel like they're talking about, like, oh, she's this, like, stray dog who doesn't fit anywhere, and basically, like, I'm just using her, right? Okay, that's fine, but they talk about her, a little bit of her backstory, so then you think, okay, maybe we're gonna get more about her, because she kind of fits, like, the Mulan person, also, where she doesn't fit the norm, right? But we never get it, and then when we do get it, it's there's an arrow to the hawk, and it's like, oh,
right.
She sacrificed.
And with all her powers, instead of like trying to deflect the arrow, take the arrow right. in with her, right. she, exactly. she why do you think she just try to stop
arrow from being shot? Everyone grabs arrows like it's nobody's business,
right? Yeah,
in this movie, right. But she had to take it, like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that was not that was also that happened way fast, and I didn't make sense in the world that they were saying.
Yeah,
for me. But it seems like we're all on the same page on that particular problem of the movie. What do you guys think of the whole ancestor thing, the phoenix component?
Bring back Mushu.
Well, yeah, I mean, it'll be out of place if Eddie Murphy reappears.
I liked it. I liked that she's the only one who saw it, and it was like helping her move through the world.
Right.
It was almost like a reassurance of she's doing something right.
Right. Yeah. That's what I thought too, and that's why I liked it.
I thought it worked. At first, I thought other people saw it, and I was like, ah, that's fucking stupid. But then when she saw it in a reflection, and then she looks back and it's not there, I was like, oh, okay, it's just her.
Right. It has a very Moana feel, but like not quite, where the water in Moana is like very active and has consciousness and like literally plays with the characters. Now, that's more that is happening in that movie, but it almost isn't either. This one is like that. It's almost like almost magical realism, but it is or isn't. It's all not in her head. Like she's like all fucked up in her brain, but I'm saying she is definitely seeing it herself only. It's good. It's a good guidepost to be, a good person or the person that she wants to be or is expected of her, or she wants to be herself, like the better version of herself. Right. And that's really the whole point of it. Last and certainly not least, the plot of the bad guys and all the stuff with the Emperor. How do you guys feel about, cause the plot is still essentially the same. It's just the way things happen along the way are the changes.
So I had another issue with that also. When they just take a garrison with like 10 people, like what the fuck? Like, I don't know. At the beginning of the movie when they first attack, I was like, it just doesn't seem believable. You know, like, because they're like expecting them. They just like march in. Like, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what? It's not even like a hidden attack. I don't know. It just it didn't seem too believable.
Okay.
And then later it makes sense because they have a bigger army, and I was like, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, and that army was just a decoy in the end, right?
Yeah.
Or like bait, so, or what do you call it, a lure, maybe?
I didn't hate it. I just did feel like, you could have done something different there.
Okay. Luke, what'd you think about that?
Yes. Which part?
The thing with the bad guy army / the Emperor stuff.
Yeah, it was fine. You know, go wreck some shit and, you know, stage a fake thing, go get the actual thing there. Hopefully no one finds out your plan and ruins it.
It did seem, though, that the existence of the witch was to impersonate the people that would allow for the final battleground, so to speak. And I guess, and that could be another knock to the character, right? How she is also on top of like being all these things, like able to animorph and able to, you know, do all these things. She can also transform into a believable copy of someone, doppelganger them, and to do their bidding, to just accurately, exactly do the right thing, so that way there's no like. More complications with the political aspect of the thing. Where's the Royal Guard and where's the actual army and how many, you know, it kind of diminishes a lot of the deaths. In true to Disney fashion, even though there's a lot of murdering, technically, a lot of battles or a lot of stuff like that, there's no blood, not even a little bit, I think, in the whole movie. I don't know if you guys noticed that. But that did take me out of the movie. It did take me out because it's unrealistic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Every stab produced no blood in the movie, and it was a little weird.
Yep.
It was off-putting, especially because I was considering this remake to be more of an adult. Like we said, like it feels like it's geared for the people who grew up with the original Mulan.
Right.
And I was like, where the fuck is my blood? I grew up with blood. Where's the blood? Yeah. I don't love this movie. I just compare it to their other remakes. It's way better. I really much more enjoyed it. And as a movie in itself, like try to like take myself away from Disney as a corporation and the original Mulan, I thought it was a fine movie, you know, a solid movie. Not like whatever, not top 10 worthy, but it's solid. I could even watch it again because it's easy to watch too, I felt. But that's how I ended up. And again, I did not know that was Jet Li for the life of me. Did not figure that out until I read the thing after.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy. But yeah, the whole thing with the ending and the Soldier Boy and the, everything was fine.
Soldier Boy?
The love interest from the other
Soldier. Oh, okay. Yeah. They're talking about a Soldier Boy.
No. No. Yeah, clearly, that's what I mean. But Lexi was next to me when I was watching this movie, right? She was watching it too. Instantly hated it because there was no musical to it. Hated it every time they put like a little tune. From one of the original songs, they're like, great, they can show the instruments, but not the, they can't sing it, huh? She just kept making fun of it. It was kind of funny to watch. watch her suffer. But I told her, like, hey, if you want to just watch the original, they're there. You don't have to rewatch it. That's how I felt. But yeah, anything else on Mulan, guys? For me, there's not a whole lot beyond this point, but what do you guys have? Anything else? Or say, or rest your case?
2 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
Well, I don't think it's that bad.
Nah, I give it like 3.5.
Yeah, 3.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I mean, that's roughly how it sounded, like we all
2.5.
2.5. What were you going to say, Ralph?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, so that's our review of Mulan. I know it's a little late in the coming, but it's still there to rent for $30 if you want to see it.
I think, isn't it cheaper on iTunes now? I could have sworn I had a pop-up before.
I didn't know it was on iTunes yet. I just
knew
that.
It's on Prime Video for $30 still. Oof. I don't think it's cheaper.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. That movies are going to be released this way for a little bit, guys. So
yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, if you have a big group of people, really, you're saving a lot of money. Anyway,
that's true.
So that's Mulan. So we're going to take another break here. And upon returning, we're going to do our marathon review of this week, which is going to be A Few Good Men.
Who the fuck is PFC William T. Santiago?
Private Santiago is a member of 2nd Platoon Bravo, sir.
Yeah. Well, apparently he's not very happy down here at Shangri-La because he's written letters to everybody but Santa Claus asking for a transfer. And now he's telling tales about a fence line shooting. Matthew?
I'm appalled, sir.
You're appalled. This kid broke the chain of command and ratted on a member of his unit to say nothing of the fact that he is a U.S. Marine and it would appear he can't run from here to there without collapsing from heat exhaustion. What the fuck is going on in Bravo Company, Matthew?
Colonel, I think perhaps it would be better to hold this discussion in private.
That won't be necessary, Colonel. I can handle this situation, sir.
The same way you handled the Curtis Bell incident?
Sir, your methods of leadership...
Don't interrupt me, Lieutenant!
I'm still your superior officer.
And I'm yours, Matthew. I want to know what we're going to do about this.
I think Santiago should be transferred off the base immediately.
He's that bad, huh?
Not only that, but word of this letter's bound to get out. He's going to get his ass whipped.
Transfer Santiago. Yes. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure that's the thing to do. Wait. Wait, I've got a better idea. Let's transfer the whole squad off the base. Let's, on second thought, Windward. Let's transfer the whole Windward division off the base. John, go on out there and get those boys down off the fence. They're packing their bags. Tom?
Sir.
Get me the president on the phone. We're surrendering our position in Cuba.
Yes, sir.
Wait.
Military lawyer Lieutenant Daniel Caffey defends Marines accused of murder. They contend they were acting under orders. Very simple, I guess. Kind of feels like there's more to that anyway. But this is A Few Good Men from 1992. I guess one of those oldie ones. Directed by Rob Reiner, the great... I don't know if he's still alive. I think he's still alive. Rob Reiner, who directed a lot of really amazing movies that a lot of people kind of like take him for granted for. But this is one of them. Also, one of the projects that made Aaron Sorkin a big deal. Because he wrote the screenplay and the teleplay, apparently.
Seems Sorkin-esque.
Yeah, right. It does feel Sorkin-y, yeah. Let's see. This movie obviously stars Tom Cruise, Demi Moore, Kevin Bacon, Jack Nicholson, of course, Kiefer Sutherland, Kevin Pollak. All those are really big actors right now, or have been. I mean, J.T. Walsh, James Marshall, a bunch of people. A lot of people you recognize. Cuba Gooding Jr. is in it for a bit. No, Wiley. Oh, Wile. Sorry. For the West Wing fans, Joshua Molina's in it. Anyway. This is A Few Good Men from the 90s. We're going to start, obviously, with... this is part of our marathon. If you're not sure what we're doing, why we're doing this movie, I'll just reiterate that this is part of our Jack Nicholson marathon, where we're kind of retrospectively looking at his movies, his films and his work and stuff, and seeing how he's evolved and whatever, and what kind of actor he is, what do we think of him, based on these projects that we just handpicked months ago. So... this is one of them. And we're actually near the end of our marathon. We have like two left. And we're going to start off with Roth. Ralph, what did you think of old Jackie Boy in this movie? For and the supporting role he is in.
He's a super supporting role. But you know, he comes out when he needs to. I just think he's like a fucking what's it called, like a trapped panther, just wanting to like release and like act. At least in the beginning, you know, you see his face. He's very calm, very collected. But when he wants to go off, he's like, you can tell he wants to go off. And especially in that scene, the pivotal scene in the movie, when he's in the court. So, yeah, I mean, I think even though he's a supporting, that a lot of his just persona is in there with him. Like, he commands the room and he commands your attention. So I think he does a really good job in that aspect. Of how we know that he does a really good job at acting, and he just shows it from mannerisms. Even though it's a smaller role in comparison to what we've been talking about, his other main roles, which is him in like 95% of the movies, he's like in 10% or 15% of this movie. So for him to still command like the presence of the room and still kind of own the scene, it works out. I mean, I think he did a really good job, and I think everyone knows what he's already kind of accomplished before and what he's kind of capable of, and he does this in a really good way because he's playing a colonel, and he still fits like this almost loose cannon, but in check loose cannon for the government.
Or for the military. Right. Like an allowable loose cannon.
Right.
Like everyone has to put up with it, not like, you know, we should do something about this guy.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Luke, what did you think of this guy?
Oh, man. Yeah. So, yeah, he did not have a big role in the film, but when he was on screen, you felt his fucking presence. Like, there were moments, like, especially in the courtroom, where just, his facial expressions when he was talking, like, if I was in that room with him, I'd probably shit my pants because I know he wants to fucking gut me right now.
Yeah.
That man was scary.
Yeah, he has, like, this thing where, like, he is, I guess he's not charming. He has no charm. I would say, no, I don't say no charm because he had to get here somehow, right, as well. But, phone problem. Anyway. He's so arrogant and such an asshole, and that's what he's playing. That's what those are the two main emotions I want to say that he probably gets from people, like the audience watching this movie. Right? Arrogant and very emotional, and obviously, like movie.
At his rank, you kind of have to, you know.
Well, that's all. You know, that's also what we tell ourselves, right? That's like how we think it should be. Obviously, it doesn't have to be that way, but it definitely feels like how else would you command Guantanamo Bay Air Base or whatever, naval base, right? How else would you do it? Probably wasn't even a naval base. I don't know what kind of base it was, just military base. And I feel like it feels like what he's doing, it needed to get done in a way. Now, I'm not saying the main plot of the movie, mind you, because the movie, and we'll talk about the movie, I guess, separately, but like, the way the movie portrays and kind of talks about the Colonel, we should say, what is his name in the movie? Colonel Jessup. The way Colonel Jessup is, even though he's in it, like Ralph said, like 15 minutes total in the movie, he is actually in every scene or in most scenes because everything is on him. Everything is happening because of Colonel Jessup. And there's always like his motivations and his actions are always hanging in the air and identifying and dictating the actions of the main characters. And the movie actually shows you that and kind of like continuing that arrogance into by telling you, the audience, earlier on, like before halfway through the movie, that I think it was actually even earlier than that, that it was his fault. Like, that he did it on purpose. He's lying. Like, he is trying to get away with it. trying to get away with something, trying to get away with not having to defend himself or whatever you want to call it, right? And so every time he speaks after that, like that famous, not famous, I guess, I mean, this whole movie's famous, but like that really pivotal scene is when Tom Cruise's character meets with him the first time. Oh, not the first time. Maybe it wasn't that. Was that the breakfast table? Remember when they were eating? Is that the first time they meet? Tom Cruise and Jessup, right?
No, they met before, and then they were going to have that lunch later.
Right, the lunch, yeah. Right. That's the second time.
But that's like the same day.
Okay. I felt like the same. Okay. Yeah, that scene was so pivotal to what was going to come after the great iconic scene later on, right? And like it's like a pre-burner or a pre-order of the same scene or something. It's like a foreshadowing of that kind of tension and what kind of like animosity these two characters will have later on. It just keeps snowballing because of Colonel Jessup's actions and Kathy's stubbornness, because that's the thing, is that what makes also Colonel Jessup awesome, and Jack Nicholson does a good job of it, is that he's actually mirroring the very similar attributes and qualities that the main character, the hero, has. Stubborn, arrogant, doesn't think that they're ever wrong, right? Things like that. And that stubborn and arrogance is what drives both of them to go beyond what they, not are asked to do, but like go further into something where it could be very perilous for them, but they still do it, you know? And we'll get into that when we actually talk about the movie. But I think Jack Nicholson did a pretty good job. He just took out the charm, basically. He just removed charm from his acting toolkit and just added more arrogant overtones. Because you could tell a lot about Colonel Jessup's whatever. If you just have one conversation, if you just see the lunch scene, you know everything, almost everything you need to know about him. You know how to approach him or just avoid him. You know what kind of man he is. You know what kind of upbringing he might have even gotten. You know that he has a strict military base that he, you know, he handles like a Swiss watch or something, or something like that, or like with a heavy hand, you know. And you know a lot about him from one scene with him, and it's pretty good. So yeah, big fans. Anything that you guys want to say or talk about Jack Nicholson's performance, especially considering like his 90s stuff? I mean, we've seen him in tons of things. He's super famous by this point. Do you guys feel like this was, how do I put this? How does this fit into his movies?
I think he had a free weekend, so he's like, oh, I'll just do this movie real fast.
Free week.
Probably did it all in a day shot, you know?
He probably could have, or at least like a weekend or something.
Right. Quick weekend trip.
I mean, at this time, he's the biggest actor.
Really?
Right?
Tom Cruise?
I mean, Tom Cruise, yes, he was in Top Gun. And
oh, he was. Thunder. Yeah.
But Jack Nicholson, I think, was the bigger star still.
And Cocktail. I think Cocktail came out by that point.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And Risky Business. Yeah, I know. But I'm not saying that that Tom Cruise wasn't famous, but I don't know. I bet maybe they're the same. Maybe they're at the same level.
I think he's too big for that role. Or maybe that's exactly what they wanted. Someone with a really big repertoire for this like big position.
Oh, you mean Jack Nicholson was too big for the role, but they... Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess they could have gotten a lot of different kinds of people. But, like, I guess his acting... acting talent. I mean, yeah, his acting talent. But, I mean, like, his... gravitas, his popularity, you know, all the great films he's done since that point in the 70s, 80s, kind of gave the movie more importance. Maybe that's how it felt for a lot of people watching it for the first time. I mean, I don't want to say it felt that way to me, because I saw this, honestly, as a kid, and I must have been a kid. Like, I don't know, I'm not saying like 8 years old, but it was something like, you know, early teens or preteens or something. I saw it too young because the movie was so popular. And we saw a lot of movies off growing up, so
yeah,
we just saw a lot of shit. And I'm pretty sure this is one of them. And yeah, I barely remember what I felt at the time. I definitely didn't know Jack Nicholson the same way I know now. So I know that wasn't it for me. But I can imagine someone in 92 going to a movie theater, you know, seeing Jack Nicholson as a side character there, bringing the movie way more weight to the importance of its plot, right? Bringing more weight to it than maybe if you got in some other actor or even another good actor that isn't as you know, popular as The Shining and Batman and all this stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. Ralph, what did you do? What did you think of his movies, considering his other movies, making this one in 92?
What was the movie that was the big movie that came out before?
It might be the one we reviewed, which was Batman.
Batman, right?
Yeah, probably. Did he do Wolf by then? Because I know that was a big movie too, but I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, I can't. I'll look at this IMDb while we're here. Right. What did I think? I mean, I don't know. I just felt like around here, yeah, he did. Yeah, Batman, Man Trouble, and the two Jakes was between him. After that, he does Hoffa, and then Wolf.
Okay.
And then Mars Attacks in 96.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
And as good as it gets in 97, which is fantastic. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like it adds something where he doesn't. It adds like to that role. It's not like necessarily how Luke said it, like, oh, he had a week, free weekend. It's more like it adds the fact that he doesn't have to be the main focus, but he can still, the fact that he can still command the presence and make a big impact in a movie like this because of already his past work. So I think it adds on to the fact that he can be cast for side roles and that need that huge impact. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, I think that this is just a case of really good casting. I don't even think this is his particular kind of movie.
I do agree with you. It is a case of really good casting. Yeah,
I think that's what it is. I think he, you know, I mean, the guy doesn't do, I mean, he's never been a hard acting worker. Like, he never does, like, he doesn't do, like, what Michael Shannon does, you know?
Everything?
Like 10 movies a year and shit, right? He doesn't work it, you know. He doesn't really work for a living like that, you know. He does either whenever he wants or like whenever, like maybe it's like vacation for him. Like, oh, it's the once a year vacation time. I should make a movie. Like instead of taking a vacation, he just makes a movie. You know, he even skips a couple years in between. He never does TV stuff either. I don't think so, ever. So
no, I don't think so.
Yeah. So it's It was interesting him picking this movie, but it was just a case of good casting and probably catching him at the right time to say yes about it. Because at this time, he definitely has probably more weight than Tom Cruise. I would say so, but maybe not. I think this movie comes in a strange time because he was already. I mean, he has by this time in 92, he had been labeled, and I don't mean like officially or anything. I'm just mean by, you know, audiences and people who talked about him or knew his movies kind of saw him as like a crazy actor. He plays crazy roles, right? He's like just a whack job. Not saying that he himself is a whack job, but he just plays strange or outlandish or over the top roles. He became Al Pacino, right? After Al Pacino did The Godfathers, you know, he became after Son of a Woman Al Pacino, you know, he became I don't remember. Doesn't matter. I can't think of another example. But anyway, I think a lot of people kind of like wrote him off a little bit because of his insanity, like his roles he plays, like the Joker in Batman, or like other reasons, other areas. And obviously, since then, we're going to see him in Mars Attacks. We're going to see him in all these weird roles that, you know, why are you doing? But this movie kind of cements him a little more. So does others, but the others are not as famous as A Few Good Men. Definitely A Few Good Men is one of the big movies from that decade that people remember more. So,
yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, surprisingly so. Let's get into the movie itself. What did you guys think of Aaron Sorkin's writing in this? Did you guys knew that already? Or did it feel right? Or?
If now that you mention it, it does feel like a Sorkin thing.
Yeah, this is before he was able to, like... Very few screenwriters are able to break through and, like, command the entire movie because a movie is, like, a director's movie, right? The director is the one who's, like, kind of calling all the shots in a movie. And this one's obviously the same. Rob Reiner is calling all the shots in this movie. This movie feels like Aaron Sorkin is like the foreshadowing of his power, right? It wasn't until later that Aaron Sorkin's writing would like take over even the director itself, because the writing is so, you know, on point that it feels like it's taking over the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I like it. I like it. I like Aaron Sorkin's early years in this movie.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it's not as fluid, or it's not as talk heavy as Sorkin is used to, or as we're used to in Sorkin. Right. But at the same time, it does make sense in how, like, if you think about it, it's like a tame Sorkin. It's really weird.
Right. Yeah. It's a Sorkin pulling his punches.
Yeah.
Now, what do you guys think of this paper thriller? Overall. It's a courtroom drama paper thriller, right? No action.
So a long episode of JAG?
It's an episode of JAG, right.
Right.
Not that I remember seeing even one episode.
No? Really?
I mean, I'm sure I did when I was young. I just don't remember any of them, any plot or any character. Or anything.
Huh. Okay.
Well, you're a dad now, so that's like a perfect dad show.
I mean, I think I saw it in high school, like at like
two in preparation for being a dad, right?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think of this? Like the genre itself, like the movie. Yeah.
I felt that movies like this could be really boring, unless it has like a really good hook and really good pacing, and this one I think really had it because. I mean, I've never seen JAG, but I've seen like some of those other like TV shows type like this, you know. And some of them, you know, either if they have like a really cool like thing at the beginning, like a cool murder, you're kind of invested. But if it's something stupid, you don't care. It's like, eh, change the channel.
Oh, you're talking about like one of those case by case kind of shows, like The Good Wife or something like that.
I never saw The Good Wife.
Oh, you need to get on that, man. Good.
Yeah.
The Wife is good. Good show. So you think this movie had good pacing, and what was the other thing you said? Good one?
Like a good beginning to it. Like you want to know what happened to this guy.
So you actually want to know what happened to these Marines and what happened to this mm-hmm. Santiago character who got killed? Oh. That's so funny because I would say that I didn't super care about that. I cared because...
Because I care more if he could get caught.
Yeah, I mean, I care more about Jaffe and I care because he didn't care about the case really.
Well, not at first.
No, but I'm not saying that's why. That's not why I didn't care. I'm saying I ended up caring because he ended up caring. He ended up like wanting to really kind of bring this guy down. Now, that was at the end, but, like, in the middle, when he was starting to give a shit about these two Marines and so on, like, he was caring about them and their lives and what's right and all that stuff about justice. This is where the poetry of Aaron Sorkin's writing comes in, and they all talk about that in the movie. But, like, you know, that gluing into his past, too, his father and his upbringing and whatever, kind of, like, made me care along with, the movie made me care about it along with Jaffe's... conviction to like see this thing through trial, and so when the trial began, I was in it, you know, like I was in the movie with him. And but I honestly couldn't say that I was in it before that. I can't say that I did care. I mean, not that I wasn't in the movie. I was definitely. I mean, I've seen this movie like many times. I can't remember the first time what I thought of the first time, But the movie made me care about the case, I guess, around the trial, right? Because of Jeffrey's involvement in it. Like, I care because he was caring. And I don't know how that works, but that's how it worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I cared more of the if he was going to get caught up, the colonel, and how we're going to get to our resolution if we do get to the resolution. I didn't care too much in the beginning about the two Marines, and I cared more towards the end because it was completely directly affecting them. And I think it was until they kind of like started breaking down personally that the movie trying to make you care about them more, which is about the time I start caring about them more. So I guess the movie did a good job on that aspect.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but other than that, I do agree. The motivations were more just like, I kind of want to see what's playing out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, what did you think of let's go with Tom Cruise? And let's go with the core counselors, right, the group. What do you think of this trio, this group?
I can't unsee his tooth now.
Wait, what?
Have you not heard of this?
No.
Okay.
What is this?
You're good, don't worry about it.
Okay. Okay, I can skip
that. They pointed out to me that Tom Cruise has one big tooth that overshadows the other tooth, but you can't really, you don't, until you see it, you don't notice it. And now,
is it like the red dot on the sweater?
Kinda.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of. It's yes and no. It's more like a what angle?
Right.
Yeah, what angle you see it from. And then you kind of like, you notice like his middle tooth, like, you know, you have two front teeth. His middle tooth, one of the tooth is like significantly bigger than the other one. And it almost like he has like one tooth instead of two in the front.
Okay. So he's kind of like a beaver.
Sort of.
Okay. Well, that sounds fine. Okay. The tooth is not acting. So what do we think of,
that's what I said.
Kevin Pollak.
I mean, that tooth's got a big persona. Tom Cruise, you know, he played that cocky little shit type of thing in the beginning. That's what he usually does. I think, and then he got serious and got to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other two. the other guy I could care less for. He was just like, I think, a background guy. I forget he was there.
Kevin Pollak?
Yeah.
Come on. He's from the
Dude, he was... He's...
He does Christopher Walken.
Look, man, it's Tom Cruise, Demi Moore, and there's that third guy. That's it.
Wow.
You're like, wow.
You know.
I didn't realize it was Demi Moore until I think someone said it like later on in the movie. I think
did Rob you not was, recognize her? What the fuck?
No, I did not. Not at all.
What? How do you not recognize Demi Moore?
I'm not a big fan of Demi Moore.
You don't have to be a big fan to recognize her.
I did not recognize her one bit.
What the fuck? Have you seen Ghost?
Like, I've seen the scene.
Oh, wow.
I mean, is there anything else to that movie? Right,
exactly. Like, I don't
know. Yeah, there's a whole plot around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it all involves there's around that one.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. No, it does not. No, it does not. This is a silly conversation. I mean, I think that Tom Cruise is definitely making his bones still. Like, I know he's been in Top Gun. I know he's been in Days of Thunder, all the movies we said before. And I'm not saying that he has, I mean, the guy can have great energy. Strange is like his own kind of charisma by then. Obviously, we know about that. But as an actor, though, I guess I would say decades. It took me a long time to take Tom Cruise seriously. And at the time, now, I don't remember seeing his movie '92. I said I saw it sometime when I was young. I don't remember. But, like, since the times I've seen this movie, he was fine. But I never really gave him any kind of credit either. You know, like, he was fine. Like, I never thought about him so much. Like, in this movie, like, I was more, when this movie came out or when this movie was bigger in my watching habits or whatever, Kevin Bacon was a bigger star for me. I would say that Jack Nicholson was a bigger star for me. Like, because of Batman, probably. Mainly because of Batman and The Shining, of course.
Yeah.
Like, those two were super iconic for me. So, like, those two actors were bigger reasons to watch the movie than Tom Cruise. Nowadays, Tom Cruise is powerful enough to sell me on a movie because, you know, now I know a lot more about him. I even read stuff on him. I've seen video essays on the guy. Because
Mission Impossible 2. Your favorite.
I just muted Luke. So, just saying stupid shit like that. All right, I'll unmute you. Damn it, no, it won't let me.
Oh, okay. I was unmuting myself.
Oh, okay. Fucking asshole. Anyway, he does more. He has more than one gear. I know he likes action movies, but, like, he has several gears. And this one is, like, he's using his action movie gear to do a paper thriller. And this is what makes this movie and The Firm so good retrospect, because he knows how dangerous or the lies at stake, what's hanging in the balance, like the real morality and the danger of everything, how like his action movie gear makes it feel more intense, I guess. And Tom Cruise, you know, is an intense. Now, the one thing we all miss from this movie that it doesn't have is that he's not running. There's no running scenes with Tom Cruise in this movie.
No birds.
That's a shame. Is there a running? I know there's like a raining scene. Does he run in that scene?
I think he might to catch up to her, yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't like...
It wasn't significant enough for me to even remember the rain scene.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, but you know, this movie also feels quintessential 90s, which is usually a bad thing to say. Like, usually it's like a dig, but it just works in this movie. I don't know, something about this movie is so 90s, but in the best ways possible, and it doesn't make any sense because 90s has a bad rap. You know, '90s has a lot of movies and pop culture in general. Like, usually people say like that's so 90s, not in a good way. And it's usually because of the tone or the stupid soundtrack, or you think of The Room kind of, at least I do. It just feels very strange. The cameras were definitely way different than they are today. The style of it, you know, the whole thing with the confessing stuff and raining in the night, right, scenes. This movie has that. But, like, it somehow works in this movie. I don't know. Like, this melodramatic stuff kind of works ultimately. And again, I don't know exactly why, but it probably has to do with Rob Reiner, because that guy. I mean, you guys seen his movies, right?
Whose movie, Sorkin's?
Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner.
Oh yes,
yeah.
He did This Is Spinal Tap.
Yeah, he did. That's a big movie. That's like a genre defining kind of movie, I would say. Yeah, he did a lot of things. Ghost of Mississippi. The American President, North, Misery. He did Misery. When Harry Met Sally, Princess Bride. The guy is like one of those, what do you call it, iconic directors. I'm not saying no one mentions them, and a lot of people do know what iconic, like what he's done for the film industry, but like, it's like no one ever really thinks about it because he kind of works at different areas. Like, he does different genres, he does different actors and all these different things. But like, somehow they're like really iconic to what kind of movie they are, and A Few Good Men is one of them, I think. It's like a really good episode of JAG, right? But with bigger actors. So do you guys find the movie believable as it ramps up to that trial court scene, the famous court scene? Did it all feel believable getting there? Did the movie do a good job of like cementing that home? Did you still feel that impact? I assume this is not your first time, right, guys, watching this movie? You guys have seen it before?
Yeah, I've seen it before, but when I was...
Rough 2, right?
In my youth.
Yeah.
All right, seeing it, like, let's say the 10th time. I'm sure it's not 10th time, but maybe it is. Seeing it after all these years again, did the impact, was it still there, or was it considerably less, knowing what was going to happen? Like, did the movie work its... That impact of that last scene.
It worked,
yeah.
Because I forgot what it was.
Of course you did. You always forget.
Yeah, it's the greatest thing. I think when I'm old and I have Alzheimer's, it'll be great. I mean, new people every day.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to look at it. I mean, just... No, that's... Actually, I wish I had that. I wish I could forget a movie and just rewatch it for the first time again.
See?
But then again, no. So, so it worked for you because you forgot. Okay.
Right.
But besides that, did you find it believable?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
To ramp up to it.
Do you feel like
the whole movie was meant for that scene? Like that kind of thing? Or did it?
100%.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It was like a, like the twist in the movie, like the last twist, you know, the killer's not really alive, or no, this is the real history of the killer. He's your mom or whatever the fuck. Like, it's like that, but without the twist part. It's just a reveal, right? It's just one reveal. It's not even a real, because we know what it is. It's just trying to get him to do it. Rob, did you find it as believable too, or did it feel the same many years ago?
Trying to think. I was a wee lad when I saw it many years ago.
I don't remember either, man.
I mean, I remember this scene because I've seen that scene many times, and I've seen that like part of the movie. You know, like it's been on TV, and you just kind of like, oh yeah, I'll watch it. Like an hour in already, fuck it, I'll watch this movie. And it is a buildup. So to this one, I guess watching it now, it's like you can see the setup, as in like they're setting Tom Cruise up to get him to say something. You know, like the whole plot of like, you know, he takes a jab in the beginning of the movie when they first see him, and he asks Colonel Jessup for something, and he wants to get a reaction to see how he, you know, and that from there they use that as a callback, you know, to like poke and prod him in the interview process to try to get a reaction out of him and see how he's going to react to potentially what information we can get something out of him. Not necessarily what they got, but something along that line. And yeah. So yeah, I think that there's definitely set up for it. So it is something for, you know, that the movie is, that we're expecting for the movie. So seeing that is kind of cool, but I mean, we all know that that's like the pivotal scene. So.
Yeah, I mean, it does work for it. It is a build-up the whole time. It's catching the serial killer kind of thing. But also, like, I think what makes this movie super iconic and, you know, you can't handle the truth is, like, literally, like, if you say it on YouTube, it's almost plagiarizing. Like, you might have to pay a few good man money because, like, that's how much it's taken that sentence for itself. It worked because I think the movie does a really, really awesome, solid job at talking about the morality of what the movie's about. This is not a cut and dry thing about like everyone is guilty in the movie. I know the movie, it doesn't like, it's not rated R. It doesn't show any hardcore anything. It doesn't like particularly play into the the good and badness of everyone. But it has all of that. Everyone in this movie has hang-ups or is guilty about something or they've made mistakes before, right, that they have to account for, from Jessup to Kathy to the two Marines on trial, right? Because they made a huge mistake. They're the innocent in the movie, but they committed a crime in killing this kid, right? They still committed the crime. Now, the case is about whether or not they were ordered to do that. And that's the whole point. But really, the reality is that they still did it. And the movie does, it doesn't let that go. The reason You Can't Handle the Truth is so famous is because it really makes you, the audience, think about, or at least it addresses the question of the morality of it. And what did you guys think about that? Like, do you guys feel like they were right? Were they wrong? Who's right in this case?
I mean, they were obviously wrong. And he even said it himself, like, towards the end. Like, you know, the other guy's like, you know, we were supposed to be the ones to protect, like, the weak or whatever. And they didn't do that.
Right. He does say that, right? And that does probably lend a good... It probably gives the audience an out. But what do you think personally? Like, you know, I mean, we're not military people. None of us here, right? So we're not going to pretend like we are. Or anything like that, but we know roughly how it works. You're given an order, you take it. Do you take that order? You know, should they be arrested? Is my point for not taking the order, right? Because that's court martial. That's why they're there. And I mean, that's not why they're there because they killed the kid. I'm saying if they didn't follow that order, they will still be in jail. You know, for disobeying one. I'm saying is that the movie kind of. It's like it's
so you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Feels like very similar to the situation with police officers who rat out on other police officers. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So the right thing to do is that we've been taught in, I don't know, just in general, is do the right thing, right? And the right thing is to say something or speak up about something. But if you do the right thing in this aspect, you get shunned by everybody else. And then you basically don't have a job or you're not going to be in the place that you want to be or where you're currently at because now you're damned if you did it. So it's a very similar situation here, almost exact. So if they don't do it, they get potentially sent away or whatever the case is on their end of getting in trouble from their commanding officer for not following an order. Because they did it, you know, yeah, they technically followed orders. Should they have? No, because it was an order that was going to potentially do what ended up happening. And yeah, they got out, but they got out with a dishonorable discharge, which means they get no benefits. They get nothing because they did an order that shouldn't have been an order to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still doing something wrong. It's not in the book. It's not in your SOP, as they said. Code Red's not in the SOP. So, yeah, it's shitty. It's a complete and utter shitty situation to be in. I don't even know what I would do, to be honest with you. Especially at that age, because they're young and everything. So, yeah.
Right, yeah, I mean, right.
I would think I would do the right thing, but as an adult now, but yeah. I don't
know. Rock in a hard place kind of thing. Yeah. And added to that is that, you know, Jessup, Colonel Jessup, the guy whose his actions did this whole thing, created all these problems, destroyed these careers and the life of one person anyway. Like all these things that this guy did is just based on this kind of like an old world mentality. What succeeded for him when he was younger, when he was successful, you know, getting to be Colonel Jessup, right? Getting to be the status that he is now. The things that led him there are a combination of like really toxic, I would even say like some sort of like masculine, like alpha male kind of thing too. But maybe that's an argument for some other thing. But anyway, his methods to getting to that fucking stand, like what led him all the way there, is also what led him to his downfall. The thing that led him to be successful and, you know, in charge of Guantanamo Bay and Colonel and all that, the status and the medals, is his arrogance and his old-world mentality of, like, being on always ready alert and his overall strictness and his, his belief that, I guess, that there's no such thing as a weak soldier or, like, just something you can I don't know how to put it exactly, but, like, the idea that the way he was treated in Santiago before he got killed, you know, is more work, more harshness, just beat him down and he'll eventually turn instead of sending him away when he should have. And there's something in the movie that I like that it addresses, like, I don't know, this thing where people cannot shake how things used to work are no longer the way things work today. And he should have known that. He should have known that immediately based on the people around him, based on the judge himself or the counselors, you know, the way they talk, the way they, you know, the way they confront them or whatever. It's like very easy to see. And the guy thinks that he's living in the middle of DEFCON 1 when it's like DEFCON 4, you know. And it's very strange. But I don't know. I'm not saying I don't see his point of view. Totally see it. But I like how the movie kind of attunes to that. So, anything else you guys want to talk about in the movie or about the movie?
I think we pretty much covered most of the movie.
Oh yeah,
considering.
Oh yeah. Well, we also didn't talk about Kevin Pollak so much because you hate him. So
he's barely there.
I'm kidding. He's not. He's not barely there. He's there.
He doesn't stand out like Tom Cruise and Demi Moore. He's just some third rate actor.
He didn't even recognize him anymore. Raf, anything else on this movie? Hey, Raf, leave.
No, I didn't leave, sorry. Yeah, I think we talked about what we need to talk about.
All right. So we're going to call it quits there then. That's A Few Good Men, available on wherever, on your dad's DVD, VHS
collection. VHS, bro.
Sorry, VHS. I corrected myself. It's okay. Available there at your local house. So that is it for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. Of course, you can follow us all on Twitter. You can follow me on Armin Filmmaker, which is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke, where can people follow you?
Twitter at Slothmaster Luke.
Terrible. Raf?
You can follow me at Don Rafael _ between the Rafael.
And the most complicated name. Remember, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other weekend. So next time, Luke, you're picking the movies for us, and hopefully they're better than the last ones.
We'll find out. One of them is going to be on Amazon as part of the
Welcome Shocker. To the...
Shut up, you.
Yeah, big shocker.
Big shock.
Both of them were originally going to be Welcome to the Blumhouse movies, but I saw something, so I replaced it. So the first one on Amazon is going to be Black Box. And the second one comes out in 6 days, and it's a Netflix original, I guess, for the time being.
Netflix.
And that is our boy, Aaron Sorkin's The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Wow.
Oh, is a movie that he wrote? Did he direct it?
He directed
it
and wrote it.
Oh, yeah, he's been doing that lately. He did that with Molly's Game, right?
He didn't write, though, because it was based off of her memoir.
Well, he did write the screenplay. What the fuck? Didn't he? There's a script for that. It's not like they just copy the book.
They could just have.
Do it on set. They're like,
they could
that.
Have.
That's not how that works.
That's exactly how it works.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. So he has a new movie coming out, and it's on Netflix. Okay. What's it called again?
The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Okay. I'm fucking intrigued. Nice. Now, I wish we were doing A Few Good Men with that one at the same time. That would have been great.
Right.
But alas, that's not
how
it works.
Could have waited. Then,
fuck you. Anyway, so what's the next Jack Nicholson movie? Does anyone remember? I forgot. Fuck. Is it the last one?
Is it The Departed?
It is.
That's 2000. Departed, yeah.
Holy shit. That's the last one.
The Departed.
The Departed. Yeah, I guess we're going to be shipping off to Boston in 2 weeks, as well as Chicago. And what's the other movie?
I'm shipping off tomorrow. What are you talking about?
Actually, yeah, he is.
Shut up. Yeah, but you are going to Boston, aren't you?
Right, yeah, that's exactly
what he's doing. Holy shit! Are you going to watch it there?
He's going to listen to only Dropkick Murphys.
Never.
Right. The only you name Murphy? Yes. Dropkick. Can you do me a favor when you go to Boston? Can you see in their sports bars if they just play The Departed on loops?
No. Over there? And no.
Or can you tell me if they play like reruns of Sox games, Red Sox and Celtics? I think they're just full of themselves.
They just watch Cheers all day long, guys.
That's not true.
Yeah. Isn't that... Wait, that was Boston? I thought it was Philadelphia.
I thought it was Boston.
No, I'm pretty sure you're right. I don't know enough about Cheers. Anyway, that is it for our show. Until next time, I'm Oscar.
And Luke.
And Ralph. Wow, way to fucking interrupt on my end.
Yeah, I interrupted both, so it's okay.
No, you interrupted me only.
No, but I made fun of him and then interrupted you. Yeah, I guess.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie, oh my.
You didn't hear it from me.